The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello and welcome to today's show here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. My name is Kevin Turley, and for the next 2 hours, you are experiencing the Turley Frequency. Today we welcome John Hurvit, who is an author of a new book asking us to reconsider our ongoing economic and societal woes in a new light, that of Christ. We speak with John in the next segment. As always, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. Story time today. We conclude this story of one man's meeting with C.S. Lewis and how it changed his life and the writer's life forever. Okay, with all this good stuff, I guess we'd better get this show on the road. Hello and welcome back to this week's ongoing saga, this unfolding mystery, which is the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I say it's a mystery because each day it's the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit that guides us each and every way. So where we end up, who knows? Now, there are certain themes that are definitely beginning to materialize this week, and we'll come to those in a moment. But I'm glad to have you here this Thursday morning. I hope your Thursday is going well. Whatever you're doing, wherever you are very, very welcome in this month of July, this month dedicated to the most precious blood of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Now, this week, we've been led into discussions about all sorts of ideologies that are reshaping our society as we speak. You know what they are. You see them, you hear them almost every single day on the media, in the news, and especially in commercials that bombard us with issues and with themes and with propaganda, which has got nothing to do with the product they're selling often. Well, the news today just happens to be full of news related to the U.S. corporate dash over the cliff, like the Gadarene swine. Except these entities heading over the cliff are in pursuit not of profits, i.e. profit with an I and a T, what companies used to be all about, but in pursuit of a politically profited agenda with an ET. One that is far removed from other people's values, the ordinary people's values, your values, my values, the ordinary people that just want to buy a product, don't want to make a political statement every time you do. Now, unless you've been under a rock for the last few months, you will have been aware of the Bud Light debacle. I'm not going to go into it. The whole thing turns my stomach a bit. But let's look at the financial reality of that situation. The company has lost millions upon millions in sales. It's alienated its core consumer base. That is the cardinal sin of business. If you slap the face of your core customer, well, you take the consequences. And you know what? It's suddenly beginning to dawn on Bud Light, the people at Bud Light, that they have alienated their core customer base forever. It ain't coming back, guys. And the company's share price, Anheuser-Busch, the share price continues to fall like rain on the west coast of Ireland. Just a few weeks ago, Bud Light had a terrible sales around the 4th of July. Normally when the 4th of July comes, Bud Light sales rocket because people are having parties, right? They're having the barbecues, sitting outside, rejoicing in the independence of the United States. Well, they were doing so without Bud Light this year. Bud Light sales dropped to, well, they dropped to 14th place in the top selling beers in the United States. 14th place. This was a beer that was number one for decades. 14th place. Loserville. During the 4th of July time, Anheuser-Busch, the people who own Bud Light, tried to salvage their operation by giving a $15 rebate on every pack of Bud Light that was sold, effectively making the beer free, right? However, this was not enough to end the boycott. The boycott by people who've just said, we've had enough. We've had enough of you guys. Sales slumped 23.6% over the weekend compared to 2022, and it is still going south. It does not look like, it looks like last orders for Bud Light. It really does. Well, there's another U.S. iconic product that seems to be heading in the same way. Now, you'll know who these guys are.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's home from work we go. Hi-ho, 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 it's home from work we go. Hi-ho, hi-ho.
Wonderful, wonderful. I mean, who hasn't got happy memories of seeing Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? It was one of the first movies that I have ever seen. Myself and my brothers, we were all packed off to the cinema. It was a Saturday morning when they used to have Saturday morning showings at the local movie theater for kids. And we'd all pile in. And we would watch Walt Disney. I have to say, though, there was one weekend when something went wrong. Now, we were very young kids, and this was the 70s. But for some reason, instead of a Walt Disney movie, they showed us a Charles Bronson movie. I kid you not. And it was totally unsuitable in all sorts of ways. And we were sat there with our ice cream and our popcorn thinking, what is all this? Who's this guy with a mustache? Anyway. For those of you who don't know who Charles Bronson was, he was one of those. He was a bit like Clint Eastwood back in the 70s. Anyway, we'd sit there and watch Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And we'd love it. You know, we'd sit there, the songs, good stories, funny. What's not to like about Snow White, right? Well, a lot, seemingly. A lot. You see, Disney is no longer the wonderful world of Walt Disney. We have instead a kind of anti-Disney which stalks the cinema screens. And it's the dismal Disney, the dismal land of the new Disney that has replaced it. You see, in the House of Mouse, there is an elephant in the room. Now, that elephant is the world of political correctness. Or wokery, as we were discussing it just the other day on the show. Do you remember? And it's now come to the world of Snow White. You see, a few days ago, or at the weekend, there were released a number of pictures of photographs from the set of the new Snow White, live action Snow White. And they looked awful. They didn't look like the dwarfs at all. In fact, they weren't dwarfs, right? They looked like a bunch of refugees from a war zone or something. And of course, they had to have the prerequisite 24 genders, 6,000 ethnic identities, and 47 height requirements. And there's only seven of them. So you get the picture, right? It just looked awful. And Snow White looked, well, she looked like a lot of actresses look today. You know, I mean, it's hard to compete with cartoons, right? It's hard to compete with those iconic, legendary images that we grew up with. I know that. But it seems that Disney has decided to completely revamp, rewrite, retool, re-educate Snow White. And what they've come up with is something pretty awful. Now, there was a huge outcry, backlash from lots of people who love Snow White, love the earlier cartoon movie from 1937. And what did Disney do? They said they were not photographs from the set. They were false, fake. It's a pretty, in the world of journalism, that's a pretty clear-cut denial, right? Well, the photographs were proved to be just that, correct, taken from the set of Snow White, filmed here in England, funny enough. So Disney had to backtrack. Now, it didn't say we're sorry that we lied. It said they were unofficial photographs. I'm not sure what the difference is. They're either photographs of the set or they're not, right? They're photographs of the set or they are not. Now, I mean, where to start with these non-dwarfs, this non-Snow White? It's just, I mean, it's another disaster waiting to happen, right? And things are pretty bad in the House of Mouse at the moment. They reckon that they have lost $900 million this year alone. I was reading a report this morning from an industry insider, and they were saying that $900 million has been lost so far, and that doesn't include the flop that is Raiders of the Lost Ark, the latest Raiders of the Lost Ark. Or Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, that's called. The Dismal Dial of Destiny is what it should be called because it's absolutely flopping at the box office. Now, just to give you some idea of how bad things have got. Now, remember, Disney is behind this as well. Now, Disney's having a bad time, right? The House of Mouse is having a really bad year, and then this comes along. Now, the final production budget of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is reported to be about $294 million, right? Making it the 13th most expensive movie ever made, right? That's how bad this is, right? Now, not including the advertising costs, which likely range between 100 to 200 million, just to break even, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny will need to make shy of $600 million at the box office. In order to be considered a success, the film will have to make around $800 million. So far, it has barely made back its original budget. It's just scraped over the $300 million mark. Now, it's partly, I think, because it's probably a film franchise which is tired. And we talked about this. Hollywood is very good at trying to recycle or dig up something which was buried a long time ago and resurrect it for the screen to varying effect, to varying degrees and to varying success. And I think what we're seeing now is the audience, the movie-going public, are tired of these endless reboots, endless franchises. And there's also something, I'm sorry to say this, there's also something about Harrison Ford as an 80-year-old pretending to be a 40-year-old. You know, even in this world of great special effects, there's a limit, right? But I want you to think. So the House of Mouse is going south, right? I almost came out with something I thought was very original, but it's not, which is a mouse divided against itself will not stand. But anyway, I'll leave that for the moment. But anyway, I want to compare this with something which is really good news. Because just as people are beginning to get the message about Bud Light, and maybe Disney will get the message because, you know, this scale of losses are unsustainable in any business, right? especially in the world of entertainment. You just can't go on losing literally billions of dollars every single year before somebody says enough. Now, I noticed that they have fired their diversity head, Supremo, just last month. That might be a start, but I wonder if the Disney brand is now damaged. Damaged beyond repair. Anyway, leaving the mouse to one side in the mousetrap that they are caught, a mousetrap of their own making, I want to dwell on the great success of Sound of Freedom. Now, we've talked about this on the show, Sound of Freedom, the new Jim Caviezel movie. It's doing wonders. It had a budget of $14.3 million. Do you remember? $14.3 million. That would not cover Harrison Ford's fee, which was three or four times that. I've read different estimates, but at least three times that, just for Harrison Ford in that other movie. So Sound of Freedom, $14.3 million. And you remember it was Disney who made it originally? And then they shelved it because they didn't like it, because maybe it was too honest, too clear. And maybe it also because it dealt with some very good issues. And it's more interested in wokery of whatever sort these days, dwarfs of 57 varieties. So the producers had to go via the independent route, and they had to buy it back from Disney and finally get it released 2 years, well, actually 3-4 years after its initial completion. 2018, 2019 was when it was completed, ready to roll, and Disney shelved it. Terrible. Well, Sound of Freedom has just broken the $100 million mark at the box office. That's great. That's a fantastic return on $14.3 million. Come on. Champagne corks will be popping all over. This is great news. Angel Studios will be patting themselves on the back. They have made a whopping profit on this movie. Now, remember, the thing to remember is not the billions and billions that sometimes movies make, but how much it costs to get the movie to the screens. So you're going to end up with Sound of Freedom of almost a 10 times return on the initial investment. And that is fantastic in the world of cinema. This is great. This is great news. It's great news for all of us who want entertainment, which reflects the plurality of views within society. But you know what? I'm absolutely certain that the people at Disney who rejected this movie will now be looking to it thinking, what a mistake we made there. In one fell swoop, they could have had a very profitable movie, and they could have restored the balance that's much needed in the world of corporate selling. Because you know what? The old adage about go woke, go broke is very simple to break down. If you alienate 50% of your audience, you're losing 50% of your sales. The secret of good business is always to keep both sides kind of happy. And in issues that are political or controversial, stay out of them. Stay out of them. That's not your business. That's the business of politicians and others. It's not your business. So, Sound of Freedom. Congratulations. Well done. 100 million. That's a great story. I think there's something going on in the corporate world in the United States. I really do. I'm positive about it. Now, our next guest, John Harvitt, is going to talk to us more about this. He's going to talk about how come these companies such as Disney and Anheuser-Busch, how they've ended up in this predicament. How did they get to this point? Which defies all business logic, right? Ever wondered about that? Why would a very successful company like Disney drive the bus off the cliff? Why? Maybe you've got a view on it. Call me, 888-928-0881, or text me on 251-928-2111. Love to hear your opinion, your voice, your question. And remember, when our guest comes in the next segment, he'll be open for your questions as well. No question too big or too small. Okay, we're going to leave it there for the moment. It's a positive that we're ending on. Sound of Freedom is doing very well. I think Michelle, our executive producer, is working on maybe getting some of the people involved in that great movie onto the show at a future date. And I look forward to congratulating them on their success. And also, we have a call at the 11th hour. Let's find out who this is.
Yes, caller, Kevin. We have a couple minutes. I mean, we'll go to break in just a sec.
Okay, let's do that then. Caller one, you're straight through onto the show. Make it good.
Yes, Mr. Turley, this is Claude. Listen, you had a gentleman on yesterday talking about the Fatima, you know, what was revealed by the Mother of God at this place of Fatima. And I have to take issue with this because here's the thing. And let me ask you this. Why would the Mother of God, he says something about showing the vision of hell and saying, oh, you got to do all of these things to avoid hell. Why would the Mother of God scare these little poor children? I don't understand this. Who would do this? What is this?
Well, Claude, do you have children?
Of course I do. Yes, I've got one.
So let's say your little Jemima or whatever she's called, or your little Billy, whatever he's called, they want to go and put their hands in the fire. They want to put their hands in the fire because they know no better and it looks great and they want to see what it's like. What would you do?
Well, I would swat their hands away. I would, you know, but this is the thing. I wouldn't scare them. You know, I wouldn't scare them, you know, and show them all these things. They would have nightmares. My son would be scarred for life. You know, would they be?
I mean, is it scaring or is it saying to them, you really don't want to go there? That's not a nice place to go. We underestimate, Claude, how children can be messengers. Children can be wonderful, innocent messengers to the rest of the world in the warning. They are unaffected by adult concerns and adult compromises. They can go out and proclaim the message that hell exists and you really don't want to go there.
I get that. I do. Okay. What is this? The music?
Yeah, Claude, we run out of time. Listen, let's keep this debate going. It's great speaking to you. That's our regular caller, Claude, from New York City. Very interesting things to say from a non-Catholic perspective. When we come back, we'll be meeting John Harvitt and finding out more how these companies have all gone woke and gone broke. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's great to have your company this Thursday morning. I hope it's going well. Now, we have been speaking this week on the show about so many of the ills that seem to be everywhere in society. It's easy to point out where those problems are, but it's much harder to diagnose a solution to those problems. Well, my next guest is attempting to do just that. John Harvitt is a scholar, a researcher, an educator, and an author. His writings have appeared worldwide in such places as the Wall Street Journal, the American Thinker, The Blaze, Crisis, Fox News, and the Washington Times, as well as a whole host of other publications and websites. As well as a writer, he is a public speaker, giving more than 150 radio and TV interviews annually. Wow. Now, for more than two decades, he's been researching and writing about what's gone wrong with American culture and American economies. And in an effort that has culminated in his award-winning book, which is entitled Return to Order, From a Frenzied Economy to an Organic Christian Society, Where We've Been, How We Got Here, and Where We Need to Go. In times of crisis, all of us are forced to re-examine where we are up to, and perhaps more importantly, where we are headed. It is in this framework that this book asks us to consider our present economic plight and chart a new path forward. And Return to Order's author joins me down the line this morning. John, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Great to be on the show. Thank you very much.
Now, I love the title of your book. It really does set things up nicely. And boy, do we need a return to order. Now, there's some around, John. I was speaking to somebody the other day, and basically they're saying it's all over. And we've just got to wait around for Armageddon. There's nothing we can do. What would you say to somebody like that?
Well, no, I would definitely disagree. It's not over. I mean, because we're still in the fight. There's so many things going on. And, I think the other side is in just as bad shape as we are, because they are going through the same process of decadence that our modern society is going through. And so they also have problems in putting forth their agenda. So I think we have to stay in the fight. If we don't stay in the fight, they're not going to just leave us alone and keep us, let us wait it out. They're going to come after us. And so it's a matter of survival.
Absolutely. Now, just in the last segment, I was talking about U.S. corporations that have gone woke and are going broke. I'm sure if I mention the words Bud Light or Walt Disney to you, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But it did raise a question, which is how come these kind of iconic American brands, which were making billions of dollars and doing very nicely, why did they suddenly to pursue this path of what seems like business madness?
Well, definitely. A lot of people say, well, they miscalculated, that, you know, they didn't realize that these advertisements or these positions were going to cause this all these problems. But, I mean, I don't think that makes sense. Multi-billion-dollar companies don't become multi-billion-dollar companies by doing foolish miscalculations. I mean, they have the best marketing departments in the world. They know their target audience. And if they do make mistakes, they know how to cover those mistakes and do damage control. And so what I think has taken place in a lot of these very woke and woke companies is there has been a shift to priorities. There's a paradigm shift taking place. They're no longer entirely serving the god of money, but the god of woke, the god of gratification. And that takes precedence over what used to be good business sense.
But how did this god of woke, this spirit of wokery, how did it infiltrate the boardrooms of, as you say, very, very business-like corporations that worshipped a different god, the god of money? Where did it come from, and how did it manage to get into the boardrooms with such a grip?
Yes, well, I mean, the old school says that, the customer's king, the customer's always right, they try to build trust. And what you're seeing now is, and I think that has been how business has functioned for a long, long time. But from the last decade or even two decades, there is this shift of people who say, well, this isn't the only thing. We want this entire freedom to do what we want, to be who we want to be, to identify as we need to be. And so, the customer is not always right. He could be canceled, and they'll go for it. It's a spiritual problem. It's a moral problem, not a financial problem. And I think it's infiltrated largely because the culture has pushed it through, and they give the appearance that everybody's for it. And so they say, well, we have to get on the bandwagon, and not everyone is for it. But that's the pressure. The social pressure is definitely there.
Do you think the folks at Anheuser-Busch are they in a state of denial or a state of shock at what's happened in the last months?
I think they realize that they definitely, I don't think they expected the reaction they did from that. I think they did expect a reaction, but I don't think they expected the reaction they got. So they definitely did shock them a bit, but at the same time, they're doubling down. They didn't really issue an apology. You know, every time it's something just barely an apology, you know, they let go of the executive, but didn't necessarily say she was wrong. And Anheuser-Busch is still promoting the LGBT agenda. You know, they are sponsoring parades and all sorts of things that are out there. All these big companies are doing it because it's the tribute they have to pay to the woke establishment.
Well, I mean, that in itself is kind of worrying, because then it's almost suggesting that no matter how much boycott, how much we take our dollars elsewhere, that there's nothing we can do, that the big companies, almost to trade, you've got to sign up to these agendas. Are there any big companies that are saying, we've had enough of this, we're out of here?
I think there are. There's definitely a lot out there. I can't, right off the top of my head, you know, I wouldn't be able to, you know, they're your normal companies that, you know, Hobby Lobby type people that do buck the establishment. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily that cut and dry. You know, we still have to fight. We still have to fight to have that backlash, because it's not easy going for them. And they do cancel. They do cause these problems, but they do also have to somehow listen to what we have to say. And the more we react, the more carefully they have to walk. You know, they may have the agenda, but they'll hide it a lot more. And it definitely has an effect upon the pace of the revolution that's happening.
I mean, do you think, John, there's an element in this, which is fashion, fad, whatever you want to call it? You know, it's something which was a buzz for a while, and most hard-headed businessmen, which you and I have met, and they've no real interest in political agendas, only in making money, they'll say, look, this is more trouble than it's worth. We don't need this. We need to quietly back out of this. Do you think in the next few years we might see a kind of a quiet tiptoeing away? I mean, for example, I've read some stuff that this year's June month, which was hijacked for reasons you know, that a lot of right. big corporations have been playing down their support for it. They've been giving token support, but they haven't really been broadcasting it in the way that they've done years before. Do you think there's a little bit of reality beginning to break through here?
I definitely do. I mean, they have what they call rainbow washing, you know, that the LGBT people like to say, well, you're just doing the motions, going through the motions, but your heart really isn't there. And there is a lot of that, because the heart really isn't there. And most executives would prefer just to avoid any moral stance altogether and just make money like in the old times. But I don't know if it's possible to go back. You know, that's the thing. You need to go back to the old times. It's we're facing something that is, you know, is very, very powerful. I think it also involves a spiritual element, you know, because there are satanic themes that are, you know, very much into these things.
I very much want to talk to you about those, John, but I just want us, you know, like Thomas Aquinas said, before you go to the supernatural, I just want to talk a little bit about this sort of natural world, because you and I are obviously on the same page, and we understand that there's all sorts of dynamics going on here, but I'm trying to understand the business mentality at the moment, which is destroying certain American brands. Now, we were just talking about Disney. You've probably seen at the weekend and the way that the Snow White debacle that's been played out, and the film hasn't even been completed yet, and it's been attacked right, left, and center,
right.
and ridiculed, lampooned. I mean, it's another grand turkey for Christmas, this one. It really is. But I'm trying to work out, really, how offending your customers is a good marketing strategy. Explain that one to me.
No, it isn't. But I mean, it's sort of like that. I would liken it. I make an analogy to sin. Sin isn't a very good health perspective. It's not. It's pretty bad deal from all points of view. But you do it anyway, and so it isn't logical. It goes against our very being, our way, what we're made to do. But it's out there, and it's out there big. So I think there's a lot of people who are really on board with this. They're completely convinced about this, and they're pushing it forward.
Okay. Well, listen, John, we're just going to break now, because I think we've set it up nicely. We've set out all the problems, and everybody listening will know what these problems are. We'll just go for a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to look at some of the solutions, because you're a man who's come up with a whole thesis on how we can return to order. And I love that title, Return to God's Order. And we can look at some of the spiritual elements whereby we can get there, but also some of the practical ways in which customers like you and I can also help with that. I'm in conversation with John Harvitt, author and scholar, and we'll be straight back after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency, live and exclusive here on Archangel Radio. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's great to have your company this Thursday. I'm in conversation with John Harvett, who is an author. He's the author of Return to Order, From a Frenzied Economy to an Organic Christian Society, Where We've Been, How We Got Here, and Where We Need to Go. And that is available from Tan Books. Just before the break, John, we were talking about how corporate America has ended up where we are. Somebody has texted me and said, what about the ESG ratings? Do you want to explain what they are and how pernicious they are?
Yes, in fact, that's I'm just writing something about it now. And also DEI as well. That's another one of these acronyms that's out there. ESG ratings
as
are
opposed
ratings,
to DEO.
DEO.
As opposed
yes,
to.
Yes, exactly. Sorry. Yes, exactly.
Sorry, John. You're about to explain.
You could go forever. Yes. And, well, ESG is, stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. They are metrics that have been put in place upon public health companies whereby the companies are graded and are told, you know, that you have to conform to certain these standards that are all woke standards and also are very ecological and, you know, very much in line with the leftist agenda. And so these are very important because your ESG rating can cause you to lose access to credit, and you know, it can cause a lot of problems in your companies. And so it is a very big threat, and there has been a lot of pushback. A lot of states have taken out their pension funds. They have really. We're talking trillions of dollars that have been taken out of from this pushback, and it is. I think it's a good example of what can be done. From the point of view of fighting these things, because ESG was the rage, but just I think 10 days ago, Larry Fink, who is the CEO of BlackRock. BlackRock is the largest. Investment firm in the world. It has $12 trillion worth of assets. And he says, well, this ESG rating system has been weaponized by both the left and the right, and I'm not using it anymore. I don't think we should use the term anymore. So it has become toxic for them. And I think that's a major victory, because if Larry Fink says it, it's over. Nobody's really going to pick it up anymore. And an example of how people have fought back, and now they have to go back to the drawing board and find something new and get it going again. They're going to repackage it, but it's a big setback.
No, absolutely right. And just for anybody listening, I mean, BlackRock is something which a lot of people have concerns about. So if they're not using it, then that's a pretty good victory, I think, for common sense all around. I'm sure you'd agree, John.
And I would also add that DEI has gone through a similar thing. DEI stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's another type of metrics that's been set up for firms, for education, for universities, for all sorts of things, where they have to have diversity officers, and they try to put in these very woke and guidelines to get everybody on board. You know, it not only includes the racial aspect, but the LGBT aspect as well. That's to right. Get them into affirmative action things. And now DEI has also been is falling out. It's become toxic. And there were four DEI executives that were just laid off or were resigned from Disney, Netflix, Discovery, and several other big companies. And so I've read several articles. I've just written an article about it, saying how a huge number of these executives are being downgraded or being let off because the executives are saying, "Well, what are we getting out of this? This is really." It's not helping us. And now with the Supreme Court decision about affirmative action, it has even put another blow into the thing. So these are very positive developments of things that have happened because of backlash against these things.
If you have any questions for John Harvitt about any of this, you can call the show on 888-928-0881 or text me. I'll ask your questions on 251-928-2111. I have had a text, John. Somebody says, I know Larry Fink. Maybe they should connect you to Larry Fink. You could talk some sense to him, perhaps. So listen, the title of your book is very interesting. I like that frenzied economy to organic Christian society. That's nice. But you say where we've been, and we've talked a little bit about that, how we've got here, and again we're talking a little bit about that and these kind of ESGs and DEIs or whatever the latest alphabet soup is, and then the final part of your title is where we need to go to. So please, John, take me to where I need to go.
All right. So often we think about what's wrong with our society, abortion, this and that, all these problems. And we have very clear what we're against, but we don't have very clear what we're for. I wrote Return to Order because I said, well, the church has a lot to offer in this regard. Even from the point of view of economics, it's just amazing what's out there. Modern economics is always traced to the Catholic scholastics in the 15th, 16th century, and even St. Thomas Aquinas. That we have a lot to offer. And so what I did in the book is I went and saw a lot of these things from the point of view of business, from the point of view of organization of society, from the point of view of, how to integrate the faith into economy and what that means. What I point out is, that what the church has to offer and what has, I think, largely been hidden for a long time. And I was frankly very shocked with what I found. I wasn't expecting to find so much, but it's really there. It's actually there.
Now, you say we have a lot to offer, and I get that. And, anybody who's read certain Chesterton and Belloc and a whole reorganized McNab on all the reorganization of society, it was all there really 100 years ago. But you say we have a lot to offer, but it comes with a price tag, and that price tag is a worldview. Because a Christian has a particular worldview, which is hierarchical, which has God at the top. I'm thinking of that medieval sort of pyramid idea that was there. Mm-hmm. And that is something which the modern world, John, I'm sure you'd agree, rejected about 1789 or thereabouts during the French Revolution.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very good milestone. That really hits the point. Yes, exactly. So yeah, I mean, of course, the modern world did reject it, and it's not going to be an easy phase to turn this thing around. I mean, I'm not saying it's just going to be you present how wonderful this all is, and everybody will say yes, sign me up here. I think there has to be a lot of people are searching now. There are a lot of people searching. I think there needs to be a lot more suffering involved, where people start to think in these terms. I'm very much in favor of this. I think we need to give God a very important role in this. So often people say, well, we need to do this, this, and this, and this. And well, yeah, and if God wants to help, he can. I would turn it around and say, well, let's implore God and say, God, help us, and then show us the way, because that's certainly a much, much more secure path.
Yeah, I mean, it requires humility, though, John, and that's in short supply in this modern world, it seems to me. What do you make of, because we talked about Disney and the way, I mean, figures are different, but so far, at least, Disney has lost $900 million this year alone, and that's before the Indiana Jones movie kicks in, which is looking like an absolute turkey as well. Yeah. But alongside that, we've had the Sound of Freedom, and I'm sure you know the history of that, the fact it was originally optioned by Disney, and then shelved by Disney. They wouldn't let it be released, and it took the producers to go down the independent route to get it released, and finally they have, and now it's just passed literally yesterday or the day before the $100 million box office mark. Do you see with that and other, I'm just thinking of the entertainment world, which I know a little bit better, that there's these kind of little, are these little shoots of a new springtime that's coming in terms of Christian endeavor, Christian entrepreneurialism within the arts in particular?
Well, I think there definitely is a lot there. I mean, one of the beautiful things about the Catholic Church and the Catholic way of expressing itself, it's not a monolith, that it allows, once you get your principles down and you've got them down correct, you can manifest those principles in thousands of different ways. Yes. And on the other side, it's the opposite. They are monoliths. In the pro-life movement, it's Planned Parenthood, and that's pretty much it. If you take that down, it's over. But with the pro-life movement, you snuff out one movement, five others pop up. And then very creative things happen, you know. There's so many creative things happen. They've taken on their Planned Parenthood, and they've really done a good job of doing it. And it's largely because of these small things, small efforts. Like Catholic Radio would be another example. I mean, all of a sudden you have Catholic Radio appearing everywhere. And, you know, it's largely a lot of people with passion for it and a lot of devotion and a lot of trust in God.
Absolutely. Now, you've been researching this state we are in for the last, the last three decades or so. And, you know, when I think about it for 3 minutes, I want to pull the blankets over my head again. You know, I'm so depressed with the whole thing. You sound remarkably positive, remarkably hopeful of the future. What drives you, John?
Well, I think it has to be something spiritual. You know, it cannot be just purely natural and pure natural themes, because if you look at the numbers and crunch the numbers, it is over for us. But it never really is, because if you look at our history, the history of the Catholic Church, so many times it seems like the whole thing is against us, and God triumphs, and God will triumph at the end. I take a lot of hope from Fatima, the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, the prophecies that are out there that talk about that. And dealing with people, you know, I've been very encouraged, because there are people out there that think they're the only ones. And yet when you look around them, there are a lot more people out there than you realize. You know, you're not the only one, and you'd be surprised how many would agree with you, and they're probably not too far from you. You know, our organization has done what we call public square rosary rallies, you know, to ask for the conversion of America. And, you know, last October we had 20,000 of these, and there were some people who just say, well, I can do that. And they got people together, and they were surprised what they found.
Yes, even in the UK, I've heard people say that once somebody stands up and says, actually, I don't agree with this, or I have a different view, suddenly everybody's emboldened then to stand up and say, yes, yes. So maybe one of the things, the strategy of the evil one, is to make us feel like we're the only ones that think like this, because he has the megaphone and he's going to use it. Now, you alluded to it earlier. There is a spiritual dimension to all of this. There is a kind of reshaping of society, a reshaping of marriage, a reshaping of an understanding of life, of gender, and all these things. I mean, it's really, do you see it simply as a battle, that one of the ongoing spiritual battles between dominions and hosts in the heavens and all the rest of it, as St. Paul talks about in the letter to the Ephesians?
Yes, definitely, definitely. You have to see it from that perspective. Otherwise, you would become very depressed, because if you see it in that perspective, it's the battle of angels and demons and the God against the devil and that kind of thing. The devil is powerful and has done so much, but God is so much more, you know. So you really, you lean on him a lot more, because, you know, he is God. I mean, he will come to your aid. And I mean, I'm sure many people who are activists out there have experienced that, you know, that when they least expect it, they find that strength. There is a victory that they didn't expect, that God doesn't let us down, but he does ask us to sacrifice and to make a reparation for what's so many things that are done in the world today.
Yeah, if people read their Bibles, they'll know that the Lord always comes. The story of Gideon is a good one at this time, I think, and how the Lord doesn't need a lot of people.
He likes minorities for some reason. So, you know, it's great. It just shows who he is.
Now, we're a little bit up against the clock, John, but you have alluded to it. So to talk to me a little bit about Our Lady Fatima, the Triumph of the Immaculate Heart, because obviously that is something which gives us all hope.
Definitely. Our Lady Fatima appeared in a small town in Portugal, Fatima, in 1917. And she came seven times and on the 13th of each month. And each time she gave a message. And on October, she performed a miracle. It's considered the largest miracle, witnessed miracle in modern history, in the New Testament, at least, you know, because 80,000 people saw the sun dancing in the sky, turning and dancing, and you know, it's documented, and even atheists have seen it. It was a very, very, very important testimony as to the truth of this message. And Our Lady foresaw so many things: the First World War, the Second World War, the corruption, impurities, all sorts of things. But in the end, she did predict the triumph of her Immaculate Heart, and in very clear terms. And when you talk about triumph, it's not a victory. Victories are one thing. Triumphs are overwhelming victories. So it's a very, very strong affirmation that she will win.
Absolutely. One of the things we're hoping to do on this show is to consecrate it to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. I think it's a radio first. We're going to try and consecrate the show and the audience to the Immaculate Heart. I'm sure you'd agree with that, John, given what you just said.
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, that sounds great. Absolutely.
Well, listen, it's been wonderful speaking to you, and thank you so much for coming on at such short notice. Can you tell people where they can pick up a copy of Return to Order?
Yes, you can get that at returntoorder.org. You can get it on the website tfp.org, traditionfamilypropertyorg. It actually isn't available at 10, but you can pretty much order it from any other bookstore. You can get it on Amazon. If you are a Kindle reader, it is free. So you can go on Kindle and pick it up free. It's a permanent free
wow.
Status. So you can, if you like that, that's fine.
And is there a website, John, where people can follow your various writings and book you for a public lecture or a radio show?
Yes, returntoorder.org. You can find the contact information, and everything I write usually goes on that.
Now, John, in the next segment, we're going to be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And we always pray for our guests, whoever they are. Some of them are non-Catholics even, but we still pray for them. And we always ask them, is there anything in particular you'd like us to pray for when we pray that decade for you?
That's a very, very kind of you. Yeah, I really, it's sort of a very good gift to start, you know, to start the morning with, or to get the morning going. Just pray for me and that I live up to what God made me for, you know, to keep me corresponding to His grace. That would be it.
That'll be enough, John. We'll definitely pray for that. Thank you very much for coming on the show this morning. That was John Harvitz, author of Return to Order. Now, when we come back, we're returning to a different order, the Divine Order. We'll be praying the Divine Mercy. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio.